Overlooking the lake, we have the first offices of Witherby, Sherman & Company, a beehive of production and shipping, and designed in an elaborate French Second Empire architectural style popular at the time. Today it is the Moriah Town Hall. You can walk in and see evidence of those grander days when prosperity and confidence in the iron industry was still abundant. Right next door to the east is the Witherby, Sherman & Company carriage house, which was also used as an ice house and a laboratory for testing iron ore. It now houses the Iron Center Museum. The museum chronicles a century and a half of iron mining history and is well worth a visit. There are few men left that actually worked the mines, but the museum helps us understand this incredible history. Brian Venn came from a mining family. His father was a driller, and he helps oversee the Iron Center Museum.
My name is Brian Venn. I'm a lifelong resident of this community. My father worked days. It was a 7-to-3 shift. He would leave the house at 6:30 in the morning. He would go over to the mines. My father ran a number 80 drill, which was 80 pounds, and he literally shook hands with the 80-pound drill all day long. And there was a 120 drill, which weighed 120 pounds. Most of those were on a tripod, or they were anchored. But if you drilled the rays, you could anchor it to a point, but most of the time you just bowled it. You could always tell a driller. You could always tell somebody that worked underground is how he turned. You didn't turn your head like you would say to look over here to the left to see if there's a car coming. You turn your whole body. Where the mining film was just really, it was put out by Republic Steel, which is really a godsend to have. It was put out in the 40s, and it just showed the workings of the mines. It's probably around 35, 40 minutes. It gives you an idea of what life was underground and what the extensive undertaking it was to mine iron ore. And it just showed the different things that different people did, how much of a coordinated effort it was. Which it was. I mean, everybody had their job. Everybody knew what their job was. And everybody did their job very well. They took pride in what they did, regardless of what they did underground or even on top of the surface. You know, this is your responsibility. This is taken care of because it was like a clock. You know what I mean? If one part was failing, it affected everything. So if you didn't get the ore out, they couldn't crush it. They couldn't ship it. And vice versa. If you couldn't crush it, you got a backlog. Where do you put the ore? If you couldn't get it into the ore bins, there was something wrong. A conveyor belt broke, or the train was having a problem with derailment. Everything was a finely tuned machine where it just ran and had to run that way. We have the film, which is really a good thing. I think people should look at the film first. And then we have a lot of photos. We have a number 80 drill there. We have a lot of artifacts, you know, what the miners wore, the clothing. There are a lot of helmets, battery packs, pieces of iron ore. It's like any other museum. You're preserving history because you take my children or my nephews and nieces who never witnessed the mines in operation. You had to be there to really appreciate it. You know, I was fortunate enough that I was old enough to remember when the town was actually bustling, when the down street was full of businesses, Mineville was full of businesses. Everywhere you went, you could hear the mines. My father would get me up at 5 o'clock in the morning to deliver the papers. So I got my paper bag, my blue Press Republican paper bag, strapped it on my shoulder, and so I figured I'd do Mr. Savage first and work my way back. So I went down there and I get down to where Switchback Road is. And I almost got myself, holy jeez, the whole sky was orange. It was like a huge fire. So I said, oh my God, I better go home and tell my father. So I turned around and I pedaled back just as fast as I could pedal. My father was just eating breakfast. And I ran into the house, you know, I said, Dad, the mines are on fire. He goes, oh, they're just making cinder. Because they worked round the clock. Never even gave that thought. He said, they're just making cinder. He said, they fire it up and it's like a big cookie sheet. And he explained the process to me and it was like nothing. He said, go back and finish your papers. These guys want to read the paper before they go to work.
By the 1960s, the mines had gone so deep underground to reach the ore that it took workers an hour and a half just to get from the surface to their work sites. The profits became slimmer and slimmer each year until finally, in 1971, Republic Steel closed the Moriah mines.
And how they closed was kind of unique. The mine was always up and down. You know, if the market was down, the mine would shut down for a month or 2 weeks or 3 weeks until demand brought up. And it was always in a roller coaster type industry. When they closed in 1971, which was July, they shut down every year in July for 4 weeks. And that was for repairs. And the repair gangs would go in and they would fix whatever needed to be repaired, you know, either the crushing plant or the sintering plant, shore up the Don B shaft, or they were going to do something on Clonan, or they were going to do something on number 9 slope, whatever. And when they shut down in 1971, July, it was all the miners thought that they would be back again for Labor Day. And they just, it never happened. Because in August of 1971, my father said to me, I need you to go over to Change House and get my mining clothes so your mother can wash them. And then that time, up in Mineville, there was a laundromat. And they had these three or four washing machines called Big Boys. They were commercial washing machines. You couldn't really wash the mining clothes in a regular washing machine because there was so much iron ore dust in the clothes. It really wouldn't do the washing machines any justice. So all the miners, or miners' wives, would go and do the clothes at the laundromat, you know, for the big boy. So anyways, I went over, and I was 16 years old, just got my driver's license, went over, and there was a gentleman at the change house. I told him who I was. Of course, you live in a small town, so everybody knows everybody. So I went into my father's locker, you know, had the key, and I took his mining clothes. I took his mining boots, his helmet, his hard hat, his mining belt, and then there was another, there was a drill patterns on a big ring hanging in the locker. These round pieces of paper, and it was a drill pattern for whatever you're gonna drill. You know, the holes are gonna be, you know, 1 foot apart, 2 foot apart, whatever it was. So I brought everything home, and my father said, "Jeekers, critters, why did you bring all that stuff in?" He said, "I gotta drag that all back." They never went back. It was kind of an eerie thing about the mine, because I did take a tour of number 7 mill, which would be the sintering plant, a couple years after it closed. It was like your place of employment. You leave there on a Friday and you're going to be off for 4 weeks and come back, but you never come back. So everything that you left there is still there. You know, newspapers, magazines, lunch pails, thermoses, mining clothes.
Today, Port Henry is a village in transition. Architecturally, the village is mostly what's left of the Iron Kingdom capital, built between 1870 and 1930.
Come all you careless miner boys who toil in underground, and if you pay attention, the truth I'll now pen down. It was all about a miner boy who's young and in his prime, who lost his life one fatal night down in the Joker mine. This young man's name was Brennan, his age was 23. His parents lived in Mineville and raised him tenderly. His parents lived in Mineville, and it grieved their hearts full sore to know the son they'd raised on earth they'd never see no more. 'Twas on a Thursday evening in 1903 he went to work down in the mine, his heart so full of glee. But a dismal sight before daylight caused his comrades to whine, to see Brennan fall 300 feet down in the Joker mine. They carried Brennan to his home, good Christians for him prayed, and the baseball nine of Witherby, they lowered him in his grave. And the baseball nine of Witherby, They lured him down to rest. His spirits and intentions are now with him at rest. Minor boys, and a warning I will give. When you go down in those dark holes, be careful what you say. For a many a youth, a fearless youth, has met up such a fate.